we're holding on Pedimul Amud Beis, four lines from the bottom, by the two dots. We started learning yesterday that we know, of course, when the Torah says Ayin Tachas Ayin and the rest of them, it doesn't mean to actually do the same thing to him, to put out his eye or break his leg or whatever as he did to the other guy. And so we've said in the Mishnah, instead there's the payment, and we started working out how we know that. So we brought a Braisa that discussed two ways of learning it, and we analyzed that Braisa thoroughly to see how, in fact, we learn it. So now the Gemara continues with several other things that various Tanoim say, various other derivations of this concept. Tanya, Rav Distoy ben Yehuda Omer, like this, the pasuk says, Ayin tachas ayin means mamon. And by the way, as we said yesterday, you know, there's no question, all of the Chachamim agreed it. In fact, when the Gemara brings later on a piece where Rabbi Eliezer says, Ayin tachas ayin mamash, then the Gemara immediately says, can't possibly mean that, and explains what he actually means. So it was universally agreed by all the Chachamim, as we know, it was the universal Masorah from every generation to every generation, as we talked about yesterday, that it's mamon, and the Rambam says we always saw throughout the generations that Bate Dinim did it that way. In fact, Ad Kedekach, actually, that in Megillus Tainus, it mentions that at one point during the second Bais HaMikdash, the Tzedukim had a book of theirs where they would look up, where they didn't learn Torah Sheba'al Peh, and they didn't have the ability to figure things out for themselves. So they had a book where they would write down the punishments for different things, including that they had Ayin Tachas Ayin literally, and when the Chachamim were finally able to be Mevatel that and get rid of that book, they declared that day a Yom Tov. Anyway, so Rav Distoy ben Yehuda Omer, Ayin Tachas Ayin Mamon, Ata Omer Mamon, now he continues, you're saying it means Mamon and El Ayin Mamash, maybe it means an Ayin literally. Nope, you can't, because he says for a different reason, like this, again, yesterday we learned it from a Hekesh, from a Gzeir Shava between Psukim and then two different Psukim that we analyzed thoroughly, but here he says a logical point. A Marta, you would say like this, Haresha Hoysa Einishal Zek Doyla Ve'einishal Zek Tana. Imagine that among these two people, Reuven, who hit him, has a larger eye, or the other way around, Shimon, who was injured, has a larger eye, Ve'einishal Zek Tana, and Reuven, who hit him, has a smaller eye. If you were to say that it was Ayin Tachas Ayin, literally, Heyachani Kore Be Ayin Tachas Ayin, then how would you be able to fulfill Ayin Tachas Ayin, after all the different size eyes? V'chi Tema, and he continues, you're going to say, okay, so in that case, Korki Hai Shokumin Emamona, fine, so when the eyes are not equal in size, when Reuven, the assailant's eyes are smaller than Shimon, the victim, then fine, we're going to say that Reuven, we put out Reuven's eye, and then for the fact that it's not the same size eye, we're going to make him compensate money. Can't. HaTorah Omra Mishpat Echad Yilachem. The Pasuk says that there should be one judgment for you. That means Mishpat HaShavah LaKochem. There has to be a Mishpat which is equal for everybody. You can't have that some people are going to have only their eye put out and other people are going to be doing an eye plus money. It wouldn't work. That would violate the idea of Mishpat Echad Yilachem. And therefore, says Rav Distoy, logically that would tell us that it has to be Mamon, where then Mamon can be made equal among everybody. But the Gemara asks, Amri, the Bnei HaYeshiva asks, my kosher, why? What's the premise of the question in the first place? Who says you're focusing on the size of the eye? Dilma, maybe just focus on the function of the eye. Nahora Shokumine, Nahora Amarachmana Nishkumine. He took away the sight of the other guy's eye. So the Torah might be saying that you take away the sight of his eye without any reference to the exact, to the exact size of the eye. And in fact, the Elo Temahochi, now after all, if you're not going to say like that, then consider you have a case where we know that you do in fact punish the person, with his body, namely when there's a Chiyuv Nisa, when he killed him. So consider, says the Gemara, Kotin Shahoragas and Godov, or Godov Shahoragas and Kotin. What happens if a smaller person killed a midget, killed a full-sized person, and the other way around, a tall person killed a midget? You would have to ask Casey Kaplan and Lay. You would have to ask, how would we be able to execute the one who did it? What happened to Mishpat HaShavah LaKochem? It wouldn't be equal by every person. And obviously, we don't say that. Rather, in that case, the Torah is saying, he took the other guy's neshama, he took the other guy's life. therefore you take away his life without any reference to whether the body is bigger or smaller. So the same way, you could argue that Rabbi Stoi's logic, all it means is that fine, we don't care about the size of the eye, we care about the function of the eye. So therefore that's it. So the Gemara has shlugged up, not to say, of course, that it means that we do ayin tachas ayin, but the point is we can't use Rabbi Stoi's Jerusha in order to learn that, because his logic to learn that, because after all, there's a flaw in that logic. With that said, again, you know, you have Mefoshim long after the Gemara all the way down to nowadays that deal with this in different angles and point out different points in it. The Eben Ezra, actually, on the Pasuk, uses this logic, and he uses it in a slightly different way. He says, consider if it wasn't that he actually blinded him completely. Consider if it was that he only partially blinded him. It would be very difficult, if not impossible, to do exactly the same thing to make sure that the assailant is blinded exactly that much in that eye. So therefore, again, that wouldn't be fair compensation. It wouldn't be mishpat hashava l'kochem, and therefore that's another reason to say that it doesn't work. So after all, we can use Rabbi Stoi's logic, but in a little bit of a different way than he said. Similarly, the Gemara continues, Tanya Idoch, another Braisa says, Rav Shim ben Yecholim, Ayin Tachas Ayin Mamon, Ata Oma Mamon En El Ayin Mamish. Again, he says, maybe hypothetically it means Ayin. So here's another reason we can't say it means the actual Ayin, says Rav Shim. What if Reuven, who struck Shimon, was himself already blind, and then he blinded Shimon? What if he himself had one or both hands amputated, and he caused the other person's hand to be amputated? He himself was lame, and he caused the other person to be lame. Then how would you be able to fulfill ayin tachas ayin with that? And again, the Torah is saying you have to have mishpat echad, meaning that it has to be the same judgment for all. So when it's money, then you don't have a problem. You can collect money from anybody. Worst comes to worst, fine. You have a person who can't afford to pay it right now, but it still means it's a choiv on him. It still doesn't mean he gets off scot-free. It means that he is paying, just maybe not right now. We have to wait until he has money or whatever. But at least that would be mishpat echad. Whereas, for example, in the case that Rav Shimon is talking about, you would never be able to execute the judgment because Reuven is, and then you would have to say you'd have to pay with something else because Reuven is already blind. So again, the Gemara says Amri. So the Chachmei Yeshiva answered back, Umay Kusha. So what's the big problem? Why is that so difficult to understand, such that you should that you can use that as the basis, as the logical basis for the drasha? Dilma hecha de efsher hecha de lo efsher. Maybe what the Torah means is where it's possible to give him the same penalty, then you should do that and put out his eye. Where it's not possible, lo efsher, then fine, it's not possible, or patrin and lay, and therefore of necessity we would patrin him. We would say, in other words, it's always going to be ayin, but if there's no ayin available, okay, well, then we have no choice. We have to let him go. The Eloi Temahoch, after all, if you're not going to say that, consider the case, Trefa Shaharigas HaSholem. Consider when Reuven was a Trefa, if Reuven has one of the various conditions, the 70 conditions that make an animal Trefa, where the equivalence in a person also mean that his Trefa is going to die within 12 months, and if he kills a fully intact person, then my Abdin and Lay, what would we be able to do to him? Rashi points out the problem is that any Eidos against him would be Eidos She'iyat Yochel Azima. We touched on that in the previous parak. There's a concept that Eidos has to be possible that an Eidos, you should be able to have Eidim Zayman. And it has to be possible. This is why, for example, we ask the Eidim the exact time and location of the event, so that it should be possible if in fact they weren't there at the time, then other Edom should come and be able to refute them and make them into Edom Zomim. But over here, if that were to happen, suppose, now we know that usually with Edom Zomim you also have that whatever they wanted to do to the guy is what's done to them instead. If they wanted him executed, if they were testifying against him, to have him executed, for example, then they get that same mitzvah based in. But when they're testifying against a traitor, Rashi points out, you wouldn't have that because it would be an Eidos She'iyat Yochel Lahazima, in the sense they would actually not be Chayav Misa for it, because the Trefer himself is considered a dead man walking, and they can't be Chayav Misa for trying to have him killed. So in other words, so you have let's put out over here all of the various participants in the drama over here. We have Reuven, a Trefer, goes and kills Shimon, let's say. Or we don't know yet whether he killed Shimon, but we have Levi and Yehuda coming to Beis Din and saying that that's what happened. If now Yehuda and Yisachar come and say, if Yisachar and Zvulun come and say to Levi and Yehuda, Manu HaYisem, you were with us at the time when you testified, we would have to say, yeah, but on the other hand, we know that Reuven was a Trefer, and Beis Din would have to say, therefore, on that basis, we can't execute Levi and Yehuda for trying to kill Reuven, because Reuven himself is already a dead man walking. So therefore, that would mean, in other words, that to begin with, we wouldn't even accept Levi and Yehuda's Eidos. So in that case, then the fact is, we would have to let Reuven go scot-free, because of him being a Trefer. And yet that doesn't prevent us, if Reuven had not been a Trefer, that wouldn't prevent the case from going forward. So we see that when it comes to murder, even though we say there has to be an execution, not always is there going to be. It depends whether we're able to have Eidos or not. So obviously, Ela Hecha de Efsher, Hecha de Loy Efsher, Loy Efsher, Paturin Lay. Obviously, we have no choice. When it's possible to execute the murderer, then we do that. When not, because we can't have a valid Eidos against him, then we don't, and that's that. We Patur him. So the same way, we could say, here, in the case of the eye, you'd have the same thing, and therefore this proof of Reb Shimon ben Yochai is not a solid proof either. Now, Rabbi Akiva Eger points out in Gilyon Hashas a big question. So what are we saying, in effect, according to Rashi? The problem is only because of the technicality of Eger's Shi'at Yochel Hazima. So in that case, then what's the Gemara's question even? You have Mishpat Echad Yilachem. Whenever you have Eidos, then you're able to execute the guy. If you don't have Eidos, then you're not able to execute the guy. That's that. It has nothing to do with Mishpat Echad Yilachem. So what is the Gemara even asking the first place? So Rabbi Akiva Eger actually in his Chidushim explains that actually no, the Nitziv gives a similar explanation, that no, what we mean is, we're not talking, so never mind, they say, you know, Lule Peter Shrashi, if it weren't for Rashi explaining this way, then we would say, which is Achronim's standard way of saying, basically, I disagree with how Rashi explains it, and I'm going to give a different explanation. So they explain, let's say, for example, you know, you could have a case where the Trefer killed, where Reuven, the Trefer, killed Shimon right in front of Beis Din. So you don't technically need Eidos then at all. The Beis Din themselves saw it. It's not a matter of Eidos Shi'at Yochel Azima. You don't really need Eidos in the first place. Why do you execute Reuven in that case is not so much because of Eidos, but because of Reviyata HaRomit Yerbecha. The Torah tells us, get rid of evil jurors from among you. So that being the case then, we see that there's a case where a Trefer kills, we're not killing him based on the normal rules of Eidos and the normal rules of and the normal rules of all of that, but rather for a different reason, and still that doesn't violate Mishpat Echad Yilachem. So that's why the Gemara can use this argument. And then you have also the Rechon and Wasserman Privet Shurim gives a different point as well, that since we're saying that Trefer himself is considered already dead, then we're saying, and the Rambam writes and then brings the halacha that therefore you don't execute him at all, unlike this answer that we just gave from Rabbi Akiva Eger that we do end up executing him because of the Yazar Rambam Kibacha, the Rambam learns that we don't. So we see. Again, even if he killed in front of Beis Din, he must be Potter because he's considered already Gavra Ketila, he's considered already a dead person, and therefore we see that even when it's clear that a person killed, for example, he killed in front of Beis Din, it's not even a matter of Eidos Shi'at Yochel Hazima, it's a matter of that we see we don't kill him at all, even though we didn't need Edom in this case, and for a different reason, because he's already considered a dead man, and therefore we see, and yet that doesn't violate Mishpat Echad. So therefore, so the Gemara says, on the same basis, then, you can't say necessarily if Reuben is blind, and he blinds Shimon, that you shouldn't be able to do the punishment, and because of that, that violates Mishpat Echad, because we see that we don't use that logic in other cases. Okay. Here's another one. Dvei Rabbi Shmuel Tana. In the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, they learned here's a different source that ayin tachas ayin means mom. Omakra, ken yinosin boy. You have a pasuk that says, when a person causes a mum in another person, ken yinosin boy, so is given in him. And the inasina el mamon, the word nasina, the word yinosin, implies the giving of money. Otherwise it would say something like ken yinosin boy. Well, the Gemara says elamayata. Well, then in that case, you have the previous pasuk does say kasha yitin mumba adam. So in that case, then what are you going to say? That in the previous person, in other words, when it says kasha yitin mumba adam ken yinosin boy, so Rabbi Shmuel is understanding that both words yitin and yinosin both refer to giving money. So it's not referring to actually making a mum in the other person, to actually physically injuring him. We're talking about that he injured him financially and he pays financially, but we also learn from that that even when there was an injury, then he also pays. So the Gemara says, Elamei Atakasha Yitin Mumba Adam. What about then the previous pasuk that also mentions the word when he places a mum in a person? The previous pasuk also says, Kasha Yitin Mumba Adam. Actually, it's earlier in the same pasuk. No, so, sorry, the flow of the Gemara is like this. We're saying that the pasuk goes like this. Yes, Shever, Tachas Shever, Ayin, Tachas Ayin, etc. Kasher Yitin Mum Ba'odam Ken Yinosin Boy. As he places a mum in the other person, so is placed on him. So Tanan Vreda Bishmal is pointing out the word Yinosin means to give money. So it means, as even though he made a mum, he gives money. But the question is, in that case, the kasher yitin mum earlier in the same pasuk would also have to mean that he places a financial mum on him, not a physical one. So in that case, then fine. You're saying if he harmed him financially, then he pays financially. Where are you getting that when he harms him physically, he should pay financially? And if you're going to say that yinosin means to give money, then yitin should also mean money. The answer is no, Amri, because the answer dvei Rabbi Shmuel kro yisei radaushin. Actually, it's not just that the Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel is saying the word yinosin means giving money. They're basing themselves on the fact that there seems to be an extra pasuk over there. Mechti ksiv v'ishti yitin mumba amisei kasha also ken yinosin bo, ken yosoloi. The previous pasuk says that if a person causes a mum in somebody else, just as he did, so will be done to him. So therefore, we already have a pasuk that says that we have to punish him appropriately. Ken yinosin boy lomeli. So why does the next pasuk continue and mention the same point and say ken yinosin boy? Shmamin a mamun. So therefore that second pasuk. Therefore, so it's not just that the word yinosin by itself means mamun, but the fact that we have an extra pasuk over there teaches us that we're talking about mamun, because otherwise the second pasuk didn't have to be said at all. Okay. So the Gemara says, Tasha Yitin Mumba Adam Lomeli. Fine. So why does the Pasuk say Tasha Yitin Mumba Adam? Why not say, you already have that repetitious also. You have the previous Pasuk. Says, V'ishki Yitin Mumba Amitoi. So why does it have Amitoi that he caused the mum in somebody else? So why does it have to continue Tasha Yitin Mumba Adam? And the answer is fine. Aidi de boy, Mr. Ken yinosin boy, kasev namikashi yitin mumba adam. This is for parallelism in the pasuk, since the pasuk finishes off by saying ken yinosin, so it begins, so earlier in the pasuk it also uses the shodash nosan and says kashi yitin mumba adam. But you're right, that second one is not really necessary to doubt from Tanit Vei Rabbi Shmuel. We find them saying such a thing often in Gemara, that they'll say that something is repeated only to teach us something, one particular new detail, and the fact that the rest of it is repeated, along with it, that's just the style of the pasuk, and it's not necessarily meant to teach us anything else. Okay, so that's another way that we can learn that ayin tachas ayin is mamon, from the fact that it says ken yinosin boy, and it didn't need to say that because of the previous pasuk. This is another one, by the way, So again, later Rishonim and Achronim and then Achronim and so forth bring some of them. Each one brings different drashas and different ways of demonstrating how Ayin Tachas Ayin means Mammon. And of course, in all generations, they had to do that first against the Tzedukim and later against the Karoyim and later on against people who have other claims against the Torah. One of the ones is the Eben Ezra quotes a discussion on this between Reb Sadia Gaon and a Karoy, where Reb Sadia Gaon is trying to explain to the fellow that Ayin Tachas Ayin means Mammon, as we say over here, and they're going back and forth on it. And Reb Sadia tells him, you know, the same expression that we have over here, Kasha Osa, Kenya Osa Loi, or Kenya Nosin Boy, as we're saying over here, you find a similar expression where Shimshon says to the Plishtim, because you took my wife away from me, this is his first wife, the Plishti girl that he was Megayer, just as they did to me, so I'm doing to them, and therefore I'm taking revenge on them. Now, he didn't take away their wives and give them to other people. He did something else against them instead. So we see that even though it says, Kasher Sisti, Kain Esalahem, it doesn't mean the exact same thing. It means just taking revenge against them the same way. Kasher Oso, Kasher Nosan, Kain Yu Nosan Boy, Kasher Oso, Kain Yu Oso Boy, it doesn't have to mean the exact same thing. It just means some other form of punishment. Next, Dvei Reb Chiya Tana, in the yeshiva of Reb Chiya, they taught a braisa. Here's another source. Omakro Yod B'Yod, another one of the psukim that talks about this whole matter of payment for injuries. The posuk, this one is in Parshas Shroftim. The posuk says, so in Parshas Shroftim, you have instead of the other places, it's Ayin Tachas Ayin. Here it says Ayin B'Ayin and so forth. And then it finishes off, Yod B'Yod Regel B'Rogel. So Dvei Reb Chiya says, Yod B'Yod, a hand in a hand, that means you pay with Dabra Nitin Miyad B'Yad. You pay with something that's given from one hand to the other, Umay Nihu Mammon, namely you're paying Mammon, which is transferred from one hand to the other. So the Gemara asks, Elami Ata Regel B'Rogel Hochinami, what about the continuation of the Pasuk when it says Regel B'Rogel? You don't pay money with your feet, so how are you going to douse in that? So they answer the same thing as Rabbi Shmuel. We're not just learning from the words in the pasuk. We're also considering that there's an extra pasuk over here. So similarly, in the yeshiva, Rabbi Chiya also, they're dashing based on an extra pasuk. Now, the context of this pasuk about ayin ba'ayin, yod b'yod, rogo b'rogo, etc., is talking about edim zomim. So the context is, as we just said, that Edom Zomim, we give them whatever punishment they were planning to do to the guy they were testifying against, whether Mrs. Bastian or Malkus or financial payment or whatever. So since the Pasuk already says, the Pasuk already says you have to do to them whatever they plotted to do to their fellow Yid. If you meant that it means literally you have to do whatever they were going to do to him is what's done to them, yod b'yod lomali. So why does the pasuk even have to say the words yod b'yod at all? We understand already, whatever punishment they would have wanted the other guy to get is what they get instead. So therefore, shram in a moment. So therefore, we have to say that yod b'yod means paying money. Well, then regel b'rogel lomali. So again, then tackle what are you doing with the words regel b'rogel? And the answer is like before. Ayyiksiv yad b'yad kosev nami regel b'rogel. Once it mentions yad b'yad, then already it mentions regel b'rogel in the first. Then it already mentions regel b'rogel just to complete the list. But again, it's not meant to regel b'rogel. We're not meant to learn anything from it. As far as the halachas, it's rather, but yod b'yod is there to teach us this concept of paying mammon, which again, if it were, you wouldn't have needed that in the first place once it already says vasis and lekash zaman. Okay. So that's another source. So far we have several different drashas for how we know that ayin tachas ayin means mammon. Some of them the Gemara has shlugged up. Some of them we keep. Abaya Omer, Abaya says, here's another one. Here's another way we can learn that Ayin Tachas Ayin means Mammon. We can learn it from what, based on what was learned in a braisa from the yeshiva of Chizkiah. The Tonid Dvei Chizkiah, Ayin Tachas Ayin, Nefesh Tachas Nefesh. You have to consider, the Pasuk says Ayin Tachas Ayin. The Pasuk also says Nefesh tachas nefesh, that there's a case where you take a life for a life. Meaning, in other words, if a person kills somebody, then you take his life. You took the other guy's life, so you take his life. But the point is, the pasuk is stressing, it has to be only one thing for each one. V'lo nefesh v'ayin tachas ayin. You don't take a life and an eye in place of an eye. Now, Vesach says Abaya, Vesach, that's mamish. If you were to think ayin tachas ayin means literally to gouge out his eye, zimnin de mashkachas la, ayin benefesh, tachas ayin, you might end up with a situation where you're taking his eye as well as his life when you do that, because de bahadi de avrulay naftalay nishmase. It might be that you're going to do the operation on him, you're going to remove his eye, and in the process, you're going to end up killing him. And since the Torah is stressing that it has to be only ayin tachas ayin, so therefore we can't say that should be anything where there could possibly be a loss of nefesh involved as well. But the Gemara says, my kusha, why is that a question in the first place? Maybe we have to evaluate him and see whether he'll be able to survive the operation. If the doctors evaluate that he can survive the operation, abdinan, then we'll do it. And if we see he's too weak and he won't be able to, then we wouldn't do it. And furthermore, the e amin the matzim the kabel the abdin and bay. Furthermore, then even if it were to happen, that what happens if the doctor is there? What happens if the medical experts get it wrong? What if they say that he can't? Then what if they say that he could take it? And then we do it. And then the abdin and bay, and we actually do it for nochak ruchay, and then he ends up dying. Okay, imayis lemos. If he dies, he dies. In other words, there's no concern about that, because miloy tanan. After all, you have a similar case with Gabi Malkus. We have a similar case with Malkus, where the Mishnah says, amduhu, now we know they are also, Bastin has to have experts evaluate him ahead of time and see how many Malkus he's going to be able to take, as we'll learn in Masechta Makkos in the next year, Best Hashem. And the fact is that, we do that oimid, we do that evaluation, and the fact is, though, amduhu umes tachas yodei, if they evaluated that he's going to be able to take X number of malchus, and then in the course of the malchus he died, potter, then the shliach based in who's doing the malchus is potter, because he's doing exactly what he was expected to, and it's not his fault that the guy unexpectedly died. So therefore, something what I was saying, the same thing over here, hypothetically, if ayin tachas ayin meant ayin mamash, you actually take out his eye, then the procedure would be, we would have doctors evaluate him, see if he's capable of undergoing such an operation. If they say that yes, then we go ahead and do it. And if it turns out that he dies in between, okay, then that's still not violating ayin v'nefesh tachas ayin, because according to the best opinion of the doctors at the time, he would have survived it, and therefore nobody did anything wrong over here. So therefore, again, this Abaya's proof is not really a strong one. Okay, here's another one. Rav Zvid Mishmei de Rabba Omer, Mishmei de Rava, it says on the side. Here's another one. Omakro Petza Tachas Potza. When the Pasuk mentions Ayin Tachas Ayin, besides that it mentions various body parts, it goes on to talk about various kinds of injuries. So the Pasuk mentions Petza Tachas Potza, a wound instead of a wound. And we learn from that, as we're going to talk about on Omer Beis, that teaches us that even when there was nezek involved, you also have to pay the tzar, meaning, as we discussed in the Mishnah, as we're going to learn in more detail tomorrow, Bas Hashem, let's say, for example, he chopped off his hand. There was nezek involved in the sense that that Shimon is never going to grow his hand back. But in addition, there was tzar. He partially suffered physical pain at the time. And we learn, based on psukim, we learn from this word, petza tachas potza, that you have to pay for that pain as well, an appropriate amount, as we learned in the Mishnah, and as we'll discuss in detail later on. So therefore, says Reb Zvid, v'isach dadach mamish. If you're going to say that it means literally you gouge out the guy's eye for doing it to the other guy, well, then why would you have to pay for the tzar? After all, the same tzar that Shimon suffered when his eye was put out by Reuven, the same thing Reuven is going to suffer when Beis Din puts out his eye. So then why should he have to pay the tzar to the other guy in the first place? So that shows the fact that the Torah is implying that you pay tzar separately. So therefore, that implies that we're talking only a monetary payment, and there's no physical pain. And therefore, yes, we can put on the mazik to pay not only the nezik but also the tzar. But the Gemara says, my kusha, still, why is that so difficult to understand? Duma ika inish de mafanik, the islait tzayra tvei. You could have a person who's more delicate, and he feels more tzar when he loses an aver. The ika inish de loy mafanik, the less light tzayra. And then you have another person who who's not so delicate, and he doesn't have such tzar. L'may nafkamin l'maysa v'leihayach b'ni b'ni. So therefore, so the pasuk would be saying that you pay tzar b'mkayim nezek, namely that you would have to pay the difference. So if you have Reuven, the assailant, is the kind of person who doesn't feel such tzar, and Shimon, the victim, the nechbal, is the one who feels a lot more tzar, then fine, we would say that maybe we take out Reuven's eye, and in addition, Reuven has to pay tzar as well, because he doesn't feel as much tzar as Shimon does when his eye is removed. So therefore, again, Reb Zvid's proof is not really a solid proof. Here's another one. Rapapa Mishmeh de Rav Amar. Omar Krav Rapa Yirapi. The Pasuk also says that we learned that one of the five things that the Mazik has to pay, that the Choyval has to pay, is Ripui, is the doctor's bills for healing the other guy. So, and we learn from that, Litin Rafur B'Makam Nezek. Again, we learn from that even when there's Nezek to be involved, in addition, Ripui has to be paid. We shouldn't think, in other words, that Nezek just includes everything, and we would say that Ripui applies only maybe where there's no Nezek to talk about, as we'll find examples in the Perek. So the fact that it says V'Rapi Yirapi teaches us that separately he has to pay for the Ripui. So again, you have to consider, V'Sakadadach Mamash, if you're going to tell me that it means Ayin Tachas Ayin Mamash, then it wouldn't work. The same way as Shimon needs a doctor, so does Reuven. So why should we make Reuven compensate Shimon for his doctor's bills if he himself is losing an eye and should have to pay for a doctor as well? Shouldn't that kind of have to cancel each other out? So now you have both by this and by the previous one, an Achron, the Nachlos Moshe points out that, maybe the Torah is telling us exactly that. Maybe it's Xeris HaKosov that you have to pay either way, and we're not concerned about your own pain and your own rib. And he says the fact is, by both of them, we see that there can be Tsar without Nezek. So if in fact we were to say that when there's Nezek, then there's no Tsar, then there'd be no reason, we see that by Tsar alone, if we were to say we just give him Tsar, then the same way, when it comes to Nezek, we would just give him that Tsar, rather than making him pay, and the same thing you could say as far as Ripley. And you have more discussion about that as well. If you're going to actually say that the Chiddush HaOrim points out, if you're going to actually give him tsar and you're actually going to make him chayev to pay the doctor's bills, then when it comes to tashlumin, then there would be a svara to say when there's nezek involved, you're already paying for nezek, so therefore let's not make you pay for tsar and ripui as well, and therefore the Torah is telling us that not you have to pay for those as well. But if we were talking about actually removing his eye, then there wouldn't be much of a svara to say that he should have to pay for ripui or for tsar. So that's the logic that the Gemara is using. So again, the Gemara says, my kusha. Still, why is that so difficult to understand? Dilma ikka desolik bisre haya. You can have one kind of person who recovers faster. The word haya, Rashi points out, means fast. The ikka desolik bisre haya. And then you have a different kind of person who doesn't heal as fast. Again, the point might be, in other words, Reuven, the mazik, the choyvel, heals faster. Shimon, the nechbal, heals slower. So we would say that we would have to put out Reuven's eye, and in addition, because Reuven heals faster and doesn't need doctors for as long, then therefore we would make him pay the difference for the fact that Shimon requires doctors for a longer period. So therefore, again, so that means that Rapapa's svara is not such a solid one either. Okay, here's another one. Rav Ashi Yomar Asya Tachas Mishur. We can learn by Xeder Shava on the word tachas from a case involving a shur, where one shur kills another, that we learned about earlier in the Masechta. Sivach ayin tachas ayin, uchtivasam shalom shalom, shur tachas ashur, where you have the same word tachas is used in both cases, malaham and mama. Now in the case of shur tachas ashur, it means that you're paying him with money. Your shur killed the other guy's shur, therefore you're responsible to pay an amount of money equal to the value of that shur. Or half if it was a tam, whatever. The point is, so malahalan mamon, afkan mamon. So the same way over here, it means, the same way over here, it would mean mamon. But the Gemara says, my chosif, the yalt is tachas mishur. into, fine, okay, so you have this Zeta Shava, but why are you specifically saying that you should learn from the, why are you specifically saying that you should learn from the case of a shur? Nelech tachas tachas me'odam. Instead, you should learn the Zeta Shava tachas tachas from the case involving of a person. Where the previous pasuk says that it's a life instead of a life. And you would say, just like it means, when Reuven kills Shimon, then Reuven is killed. The same way when Reuven wounds Shimon, then Reuven should be wounded. Why don't we learn the Gzeira Shava that one? We have a lot of times, as we know, that the Chachamim, of course, received the Gzeira Shava, the Kabbalah, from their Rebbein. We have the concept, Ein Adam Don Gzeira Shava Me'atzmi. A person can't come up with a Gzeira Shava on his own. But many times we have, where the Chachamim know what the words are for the Gzeira Shava, but not necessarily did they receive the Kabbalah, which word it is, which occurrence of that word is meant to be used, and therefore the Gemara can deal with logically how we know it's one and not the other. So that being the case, why don't we learn from that? The answer is Amri, Dunin Nizokin Minizokin, Ven Dun, Nizokin Minisa. More logically, if we're gonna learn the Gzeira Shava, we're gonna learn from one case of Nizokin where he injured the other person to Nizokin where he injured the other guy's property, injured or killed the other guy's shirt. Ven Dun Nizokin Minisa, better not to learn from a case of Nisa Spacedin, which is different. But the Gemara says, Adraba Dunin Odom Ven Dun Odom Behema. On the contrary though, you could argue that you should learn the Gzeira Shava from a case involving a person of ayin tachas ayin, from another case involving a person of nefesh tachas nefesh, rather than learn from a behema. So Ela, Amar Rav Ashi, so rather Rav Ashi says, you're right, we're not learning from the tachas in connection with a shur, but rather the tachas asher ina yalif le. Rather, we can learn it from the posik that talks about when a man is ma'anis a woman, where there he has to pay a knas and force him to marry her, etc. And there the pasuk says, ta mi tachas asher'ina yalef lei. Rather, we're learning from tachas asher'ina, where there you have, it's odam me'odam. You are learning a case from a person, from another case involving a person, or nezikin me'nezikin. And you are learning, it's a case of nezikin. There's no chiyuv misa in that case. There's only payment. So therefore, yes, that is a valid zera shava, and we can learn like that. Tosfos points out, so Taka, why didn't all the other Amiroyim who didn't use that Gzeira Shava? It's because they say that Gzeira Shava of Tachas, we used all the way back in the first Perek of our Masechta to teach us the concept that all Nezikin have to be paid out of Netav. So therefore they don't have that Gzeira Shava available for that, and therefore they had to use other Limudim rather than this Gzeira Shava. Next, the Gemara continues. Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer, Omer, Ayin Tachas Ayin Mamish. Then we have a Braisa. So those are all the different ways of learning. So those are all the different ways of learning of learning the Limud. And again, various other Rishonim and Achronim ever since then have pointed out different with Geonim and Rishonim and Achronim have pointed out different ways. The Rambam, for example, when he brings it in Hilchos Chovel Amazik, he brings a different Drosha that comes from the Mechilta, that since the Pasuk says, talks about a case where a person injures somebody else with a stone or a fist, then you have Shivta Yitin Vidapa Yirape, where there it's clear that he's only paying money. So therefore, when it says a few psukim later, Chabura, Tachas Chabura, a wound instead of a wound, then clearly it means to pay money based on that earlier pasuk. And the same way we can learn this. So the Rambam brings that as a more straightforward limud. And again, the Rambam stresses that you should realize that whether you like any of these limudim or not, the fact of the matter is they're all halacha l'moshe, and this is how it was always done. So now the Gemara continues, Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer, I'm ayin tachas ayin mamish. Rabbi Eliezer says, it means ayin tachas ayin mamish. The Gemara says, mamish, sakadaita. Rabbi Eliezer, less like kol hani tanoi. Does Rabbi Eliezer disagree with all the tanoim we said so far? And again, based on what the Rambam is saying, that we know for a fact it was always like this in every generation, then clearly Rabbi Eliezer is not going to argue with that. So the answer is, Omer Rabba, loyma she'en shaman oisa bin nizek elo b'mazik. What Rabbi Eliezer means is, unlike we said in the Mishnah, that how do we figure out how much to pay? We figure out the guy's worth as an Eved, how much he would have been worth beforehand, and how much he's worth now, and then he pay the difference, and that's Nezek. Rabbi Eliezer says you don't do it that way. You figure out the guy's own intrinsic value. So what are you going to do? You're going to evaluate him like a Ben Chorin. Ben Chorin, me isle domi. When it comes to a Ben Chorin, how can you even talk about a monetary value? There's nobody who's selling him for that amount. An Eved, you can talk about an Eved is being sold for X amount. So therefore, you can talk about he has a certain monetary value. With a regular person, you can't do that. So what is what is Rabbi Eliezer saying? And how are we supposed to figure it out? Ella Omer of Ashi, rather, Rav Ashi says what Rav Eliezer means is that that unlike up until now, we were assuming that you use the value of the Nizek's eye. When we say we evaluate him as an Eved, so we mean, in other words, we figure out the Nizek, how much was he worth and how much would he have been worth as an Eved before? How much is he worth now? And then the difference becomes a Nezek. Now, Rav Eliezer is saying that no, you figure out according to the value of the Mazik's eye. We figure out on the Mazik how much would he have been worth as a slave and how much would be the difference if his eye had been removed. Not that we actually remove his eye, but we figure out how much would he be worth if his eye were to be removed, and then that becomes the amount that he pays. So the point is, that's what he says, mamish. He means, in other words, that you're figuring out, using the value of the mazik's own eye. So in other words, in that sense, Rabbi Eliezer is saying, it's tantamount to, you don't actually put out his eye, but you consider it as if you did, and then based on that is how you figure out the payment. How much less he would have been worth had his eye been removed. In other words, Tosfos says, Rabbi Eliezer takes the view that when it comes to koifer, we learned earlier in the Masechta, when you have the case where a person's shor mu'ud kills a person, and we said he has to pay koifer, and we had a machlokas tanoim over there, whether you pay according to the value of the nizik or the value of the mazik. So here, Rabbi Eliezer would take the view that you pay according to the value of the mazik. And here also, it's considered a type of koifer, whereas meanwhile, all the other tanoim would say that by koifer, it may well be dmei mazik, but over here, it would be dmei nizik. So in other words, Marsha teaches out what Tosfos means. In other words, that he's saying that all the other tanoim in this whole sugya who were holding that they were saying that ayin tachas ayin is a point in nizik. So then by koifer they might hold differently. They might conceivably hold that koifer when a person is killed is different. Whereas Rabbi Eliezer would say that it's the same across the board. If one is dmei mazik and the other one is dmei mazik as well, that's what he means when he says ayin tachas ayin. Yeah, by the way, some of the Beforshim, the Ibn Ezra is one of the ones who points out that another point is that that's, in effect, Ayin Tachas Ayin means that by rights he should have his eye gouged out. However, the Torah has Rachmanos on him and tells Beis Din instead, don't do that, instead take money. What would we gain by having two people blind? I mean, you could say the same thing by Misa as well. What would we gain by having two dead Jews, but it's Zeres HaKosev? But no, here the Torah is saying differently. Yeah.
So
even
though it makes sense to compare.
Even though it wouldn't make sense, but yeah. So now that we've learned all the various ways that we can learn that ayin tachas ayin is mammon, now let's get into some din about it. So the Gemara says, "Ahu chamya to kota yada diyinuka." It happened once that one person's donkey cut off or bit off the hand of a child. Also, the did a papa bashmul. So the case was brought to the papa bashmul. Amalahu zilu shumulei abad dvarim. Go evaluate the four things. Go evaluate the four different kinds of payments. Omale Rava. So Rava says, what do you mean four? Bahanam Kamishatsnan. Where we say over here that our Mishnah says there are five. Omale, so the Papa answers, Vavami Nezek Kamina. I mean the four besides for Nezek. Now, first of all, Tosfos points out that the reason why Rav Papa Bashmul to begin with is saying four things, he didn't even realize that it was an animal involved. He thought that it was a person who had injured. There, the case was brought to him. A kid was injured. His hand was chopped off. So he at first thought that it was a person, and therefore Dalad brought him. And therefore he says, a person Tak has to pay all five things. So he's saying, what I mean is, when I said four things, I mean Nezek, of course he has to pay, but because this is a person, he has to also pay the other four things as well. On the other hand, Marsha also points out that it may also be, not only the Papa Bashmul did not know at first when the case was brought to him that it was a donkey that had done it rather than a person, he also maybe was under the impression that it wasn't a permanent injury. So when he said, Levami Nezek Kamina, he may have meant, as far as I know, there's no Nezek to be paid right now. There's only the other four things, Tzar and Ripui and so forth. But now, so only Abaya, but Abaya says in that case that Abaya is setting right on the actual facts of the case. In this case, it was a donkey that did it. An animal that causes injury, you pay only nezik, as we've learned earlier in the Masechta. The whole concept of paying tsar and ripui and so forth is only when one person injures another. Amalahu said, a papa says, okay, fair enough. Zilu shumule niske. So fine, go out, go figure what the value of the nezik alone is. So Abaya asks him, okay, well, you know how you do that. You have to figure out the value. You have to figure out his value as an evan. So you should be telling them that. What are you telling them? Go figure out the value of the nezik. You should be going. You should tell them, go figure out what his value would have been as what his value would have been as an evan, and then deal, and then go on that basis. By the way, I mean, really over here it would be only chatzin nezik because we're talking about an animal that was a tam. But anyway, whatever. Fine, but you still could. I mean, people would buy a volume of all ages in those times. You would figure out a kid is likely to grow up. You know, anytime you buy an Eved, there's always a risk that the guy may die or run away or become sick or what have you. So with a kid, you know, you'd have people who are experts at figuring these things out. So Amalahu Zilu Shaimu Kavra. So fine, Rapapa Bashmul tells the Dayanim, go figure out his value as an Eved. However, here there was a twist. The father of the child says, "Loi ve'ina, I don't want you to figure him out as a value of an eved. The zila be milsa, that would be a tremendous embarrassment to him." And Tosfos, by the way, points out, since we're talking about paying boshes, evidently the kid was old enough to understand what's going on over here and to feel boshes. If it had been a baby, then there's no boshes to talk about anyway. So now the father says it would be degrading to have my son figure out the value as an eved. So the Dayanim tell the father, fine, but if you're not going to do that, then you're going to, in effect, be machai of the kid. You're not the payment is not going to be able to be made. Your kid is going to lose out. And the money belongs to him after all, not to you. So the father tells them, fine, when the kid gets older, I'll compensate him out of my own money. So instead of going, I'll figure out when I get older how much he should have been paid approximately, and I'll give him that amount, and I'll rather than have to go through this whole rigmarole of being paid as an eved. And apparently they accepted his argument, so therefore that is a valid argument. The father would have the ability on behalf of his child to say that I'm moichel on the payment from Pliny, and instead I'll make it up to him out of my own pocket.
He'll have to watch his animal.
Fine,
but
that's another matter based in they have to deal with to get the guy to watch his animal in the future. But as far as the father is concerned, he didn't want to go through with this. Okay. Okay, another case.
And you can't say, don't Shabbat and Eved, but Shabbat like a regular Yeshiva boy.
No, because a Yeshiva boy doesn't have Dhamim. That's the point that Gemara made before. Ben Chardin, there's no Dhamim, nobody's selling him, so how can you talk about a value for him? Okay. Another case. There was a case where a shur chewed on a hand of a child and also injured him. Also, the case came to Rava. Amalahu said, Rava tells the Dayanim, Zilu Shaimur Ka'avda, go figure out the kid's value like an Eved, which is, and again, figure out Chatzin Nezek on that basis. Omrule, so the Dayanim asked Rava, Vahamarhu Da'amah, call him Nishim Ke'eved, Ain Govin Oseb Brother. Didn't you, Rava, say a rule that any time when you have to figure out a person's value, like an Eved, you don't do it in Bavel in the first place? You, Rava, because you have to have, as the Gemara is going to work out now, you have to have Smuchim for it, and there's no Smicha in Bavel. Smicha, the original Smicha, Ishmi Piyish, back to Moshe Rabbeinu, could be given only in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, what are you telling the Dayanim? Now, in the previous case involving the Papa Bar Shmuel, as the Gemara is going to work out now, well, the Gemara is going to actually say now, there can be a case of Tfisa, so therefore, there it would have been relevant to figure out the value in case the Nizik was Toifus. But here, the Dayanim are asking Rava, what's the relevance? So, and the answer is exactly that. Omolahu, loit tzricha de'itofas. Yes, but the point is that you still have to figure out if the Nizik is going to grab something that belongs to the Mazik and use that and want to keep that in payment of the amount, we have to know what the amount is to know how much he's able to keep and how much he has to return. Which, by the way, it gets a little bit complicated, this question of Tfisa, and we touched on it earlier in the Masechta. First of all, we learned earlier, Tosfos learns that maybe the only thing you can be toifus is the actual thing itself that caused the hazard. So in other words, in our case, the father could be toifus, the actual ox that chewed on his child's hand. He wouldn't necessarily be able to be toifus other things that belong to the mazik and say that I want to be paid out of those. That wouldn't work necessarily. Other Rishonim disagree with that point. You also have the question, for example, when there's tashlumei kefil or other kinds of knosis involved, can he also grab enough to be paid those, or can he only grab enough to be paid the actual, the keter? So there's a big machloikus about all of this among the Noisa Kalim in Shulchan Aruch and Choshen Mishpat Siman Aleph, and then based on earlier Rishonim. Okay. So the Gemara says, Rava the Taimei. Now Rava in this is going according to his own Svara. The Amar Rava, Nizke Shur B'Shur. When you have Nizakin where one Shur injured or killed another Shur, the Nizke Shur B'Odam, and when a Shur injured a person, Goyvin Osib B'Bavel, those kinds of things you can collect in Bavel, but Nizke Odam B'Odam, but when you have injuries where one person caused another, the Nizke Odam B'Shur, Shur B'Odam is the other way around, where an Odam damages a Shur. So a person goes and punches out somebody else's Shur, or one Shur goes and attacks another Shur, those kinds of things you can collect in Bavel, for reasons that the Gemara is going to explain in a second, but Nizke Odam B'Odam, Nizke Odam B'Shur, but when you have a person was injured by another person, or when person was injured by a shur, whereas the Gemara is going to point out these are less usual kinds of things, ain goven osim bavel, those things Rava says you cannot collect in bavel. And when a person was injured by a person or by a shur, we're saying you need to evaluate him as an evet, so therefore it comes out you don't do that in bavel, because you don't collect such things in bavel, only as we said if he's toyus. Now the early Rishonim already bring, the Rif brings, the Rambam brings from the Gaonim, that even though, so practically speaking, then people are going to think that I can just do whatever I want and get away with it. What would happen is, in cases like that, Beis Din would put the Mazik in a Cherem until he pays a fair, until he and the Nizik work out how much he should be paying. Even though legally he doesn't have to, but in practice, Beis Din would use their enforcement power to force him to pay something rather than get away with it scot-free. So the Gemara says, Maishna Nizke Odom Ba'odom Ba'odom Ba'shur, Nizke Odom Ba'shur. So let's consider, what's the difference between these two types of Nizakim? When one person injures another, or when a person was injured by a Shur, the problem, Deloy, and you're saying you can't collect it in Vavil, and the reason is, Elikim Ba'inan, because the Pasuk, in connection with these things, mentions that the case has to go to Elikim, and whenever the Pasuk uses the word Elikim, it means Zayonim who have Smicha. And the fact is, and there's no Veleka, and we don't have, because there's no Smicha in Vavil, Niska Shur B'Shur B'Shur B'Odom Nami. So what about the other kinds of ones as well? Also Elikim Ba'inan Veleka. It also requires Elikim. All the psukim and Parshas Mishpatim that talk about the various nizakim, either it says individually by them elikim, or later on when it talks about later on when it talks about shomrim, it says ad elikim yavad bar shnehem, and we understand that refers to all the previous cases. So all of them require based in smokim. So why is it some of them we can do in bavel and some not? Ella, no, we have to say, Maishna Shur B'Shur B'Shur B'Adam. Rather, we can say, when one Shur injures another, or a person injures a Shur, the reason is, the Shluchosayu Kavdinim. We can say, we, the Dayanim of Chutz La'aretz, are acting following the shlichus of the Dayanim of Eretz Yisrael. In other words, in effect, the Dayanim of Eretz Yisrael are saying, look, we understand you're living in a place where there's no smicha. We are giving you the power on our behalf to go judge these cases in Chutz La'aretz. So we're doing them as shluchei based in Eretz Yisrael, and similarly, it also goes from generation to generation, even though for a long time there hasn't been smicha, ish mi piyish, but we're empowered by the earlier generations to do it in later times. Midi dehava, haidois vahalvois. Because it's similar to the case where a person admits to somebody else that he owes him money in front of Edim, or where he lent him money, and let's say you have a shtar or whatever. The fact is, we collect those in Bavel. We're not going to say that those require elikim, and we can't collect those in Bavel or in Chutzlaretz, because then nobody's going to want to lend anybody money. So obviously, the Dayanim in Eretz Yisrael who have smicha, the Dayanim of olden days in Eretz Yisrael who had smicha, they empower the Chachamim of future generations and other places to do these kinds of things because it's necessary for society in order to function. Well then, so we can say the same thing as far as Shur B'Shur B'Shur B'Adam. Well, the Gemara asks, well, then in that case, well, then why don't we say the same thing when one person injures another, or where Shur injures a person, why don't we also say that we should be acting as Shluchim of the Dayanim in Eretz Yisrael, meaning to have a Hydros for Halvois, and compare it to Hydros and Halvois, and say that such things can be done? So they answer back, no. Only we can only say that we're acting in those shlichos only when the amount that's owed is clear. So a halva, it's clear. Pliny or Reuben lent money, lent Shimon $100, so it's clear that Shimon owes him $100. The midigal like kimlon begabe, but when we don't know the exact amount, for example, these cases of nizakim where we have to go start figuring out his value as an eved. Then we can't necessarily be saying that we're acting in their shluchos. So Gemara says Amri. So then they ask in that case, then none of these cases. In that case, then it doesn't work with any of these four cases. When one shur kills another or injures another, you have to start figuring out how much was the shur worth, etc. It's not a fixed value. And yet, Rava is saying those we can do in Bavel. Ella, no, we have to answer. Obviously, it is clear because. If we go out and see how many oxen are being sold in the marketplace, in other words, it's very easy to figure out the value of an ox because you have lots of people who actually deal with that kind of thing on a day-to-day basis, and they could tell you on the spot how much this ox was worth and how much it's worth now after the injury, etc. So it's not considered something that we don't know the amount because it's easy enough to ask an expert. Well, by the same way, so new if a person was injured also. You can go see how much avodim are being sold for in the marketplace, and you can figure out an amount based on that. So it's not like you need this complicated evaluation. So why should we say that one type, that nizakim of a shur can be dealt with in bubble, but nizakim of a person cannot? So that's not a valid distinction. But oid, and not only that, you have to consider if that was the only reason. Tashlum kefil, but tashlum kefil, the tashlum above chamisha. What about when it comes to kefil and above chamisha? Dikitzi, that's also a fixed amount. We know he stole $100. He stole $100, and now he has to pay kefil $200. It's clear. We have an amount. We don't have to evaluate anything. And yet, that never shlichosaya. We should say that we can accomplish those shlichos and do them in bubble. And the fact is, we know it's not so. We know that knosis cannot be collected in bubble because dine knosis requires smicha. So we see that we can't say that it's a distinction whether we know the amount to be paid or whether we have to start evaluating it. So in that case, then why is there the difference that nizakim of a shur can be dealt with in bubble and nizakim of a person cannot? So the answer is that's not a valid question, because you could say kikav din shlichos ayu b'mamona. We could say that we're only doing the. We can only say that we're acting in the shlichos of the dayanim in Eretz Yisrael when it comes to a payment of mamon. B'knasa, but when it comes to a knas and kefal and above chamisha are examples of a knas loyav din shlichos ayu. Then we can't say that we're empowered by them to do that. Well, the Gemara says adam ba'adam de mamona hu. So what about then if one person injures another? That's not a matter of knas. The nezek, at least, is mamon on the face of it. He actually caused him to be worth less. Never shlichosayu. Why can't we say we're acting in the shlichos of the dayanim of Eretz Yisrael? And the fact is, Rava is saying that no cases of injury in a person can be dealt with in Bavel. So why not? The fact is, we have to evaluate it. But on the other hand, it is Mammon, it's not Knas. So the answer is, Kikav din and Shlichosayu. Here's another answer. When we're doing those Shlichos, we can say the Milsa de Shlicha. Only things that are common. Adam ba'adam de lo Shlicha. It's not so common for one person to injure another. Loyav din and Shlichosayu. Therefore, we can't say that we're acting in those Shlichos. Well, the Gemara says, "Are boshes of gam d'shchiach?" What about fine? Nezek may not be that common, but boshes and gam are certainly more common. For example, the guy slaps the other one and causes him boshes, who does various other things that we're going to learn in the parak that constitute boshes all by themselves. That kind of thing, or pgam, for example, you have. So pgam, for example, cases of oines and mefata and whatever. So the shliach, those kinds of things are common. Never shlichosayu. Why can't we say we're doing the shlichos of the chacham of Eretz Yisrael and collect them in Bavel? The answer is ami. We can't. Hochinami. That's ami. So the answer, yeah. Hochinami. As a matter of fact, yes, we could collect for boshes in Bavel. Dehora papa agvi arameya zuzi leboshes. We have an example later on in our parak where a papa made somebody pay 400 zuz for a boshes that he had done to somebody. The Gemara says, what do you mean? The fact is, we don't follow. The halacha is not like Rav Papa. As we find in Udiyah in the Masechta, the Sholach Le Rav Chista Le Rav Nachman, we find that there was a time when Rav Chista sent a message to Rav Nachman asking him how much is paid for various cases of boshes, and the Sholach Le and Rav Nachman answered him back, Chista, Chista, Knossa Komagus Bavel. Chista, what do you think you're doing? You're collecting Knossas in Bavel. So it's clear that you don't know, and then he asks him what exactly happened, and he told him the whole story, and we learned from there a concept called Ovid Inish Dina Lamafshe, that there are cases where a person can stand up for himself and take his own mammon when he sees the other guy is taking it wrongly. Anyway, the point is, Rav Chista didn't argue with the point that you can't collect Knossas in Bavel. So it's very clear that you can't. So So the Papa was a one-off situation, but normally you can't collect boshes. Normally you can't collect not knosses. You can't collect boshes in Babel. So notwithstanding what the Papa did, that was a one-off thing. But generally you can't do that. So we see that even though boshes is common, and even though boshes is common, you can't collect it in Babel. So what's the rule? When do we say that Avdin and Shlichus Ayah, and when not? Ella, rather, we can answer Ki Avdin and Shlichus Ayah b'milsa d'shchicha. What we can say is, when are we considered that we're following those shlichos of the Chacham of Eretz Yisrael, when it's something common, the iste chisorin kis. And there's also the other guy is actually losing money. For example, a halva, he lent out $100 and now he wants his $100 back, otherwise he's losing money. So that kind of thing, that's common, and there's money involved, therefore, yes, I will milsa the shticha, bless the chisorin kis. But where it's common, for example, boshes, but there's no chisorin kis, when a guy is slapped by somebody else, he didn't actually lose any money, he just lost face. So therefore, that's not a valid reason to collect that in Babel. Inami milsa de la shticha v'isbe chisorin kis, or the other way around, it's something uncommon, but there is a loss of money. Lo yavdin, shlichosayu, those kinds of things we don't do, they're shlichos. Hilkach, so therefore we can summarize and say so far as follows. Of the four cases that Rava mentioned earlier, Adam v'Adam, when it comes to one person injuring another, Afogab de Isbe Chisorin Kis, it is true that there is Chisorin Kis involved, because the guy is actually worth less now, because now he's missing a hand or whatever it is. Nevertheless, Kivin de Leshticha, it's not common, Loyav Dinin Shlechosayu, therefore we, Bate Dinim, in Chot Laretz, or even nowadays in Eretz Yisrael, where they don't have Smicha, are not able to collect. Are not able to force him to pay such things. The most we can do, again, is that social pressure by putting him in Cherem. In addition, the Gemara mentions back in the time when they had Udiyah in the Masechta, we learned back when there were Smuchim in Eretz Yisrael, but not in Babel, then Nizek can force the Mazik to travel with him to Eretz Yisrael to have it judged in front of the Dayanim. Similarly, Boshes, Afagab the Shchicha, and when it comes to Boshes, it's common, but given the less way, Chisorin Kis, but there's no Chisorin Kis, Lo Yavdin Shlichus Ayu, then again, we can't say that we're accomplishing those Shlichus, and therefore we can't collect it in, Bogger. So that neatly answers the questions that we said before of what we're able to collect in Bavel and whatnot. Tosfos, by the way, points out that even as far, now what about, for example, Gzelus? Gzelus, on the face of it, are not as common. Gzelus for Chavolus, cases of injury, and cases of Gezel are not that common. Based on the Gemara's rule over here, we shouldn't be able to collect them in Bavel, yet we find that Gzelus were collected in Bavel. We find various examples of that in the Gemara, including later on in our Masechta.
Is there a Gemara somewhere?
That's something that where the Ganovim and Gazlonim are two different things. But so Tosfos says, first of all, obviously you could say all the cases that the Gemara talks about is where he was Tosfos, and therefore we need to know how much he's able to keep, like we said before. But also Tosfos says another way of understanding it is, when do we say that you can't judge a case of Gezel and Bogel, where you have, there was a fight between two people, and the result of it was that somebody grabbed something from somebody else. That's a very unusual kind of Gezel. That time you can't necessarily collect in Bogel. But when we have a regular gzela, that we could, because that's considered, that's more common. In fact, Tosfos says, Maisim b'chol yom, that we judge dini gzelas. And then there are various other explanations among the Rishonim, and I brought again Nosa Kalim at the beginning of Choshen Mishpat over there. about distinctions between different kinds of gzela. For example, we might distinguish between gzela where it's a result of, for example, if the guy was a shomer or something, and now he's gozel the thing versus a regular case of gezel. So you can distinguish between different cases of gzela, some of which you can collect in bavel all the time, and some not, depending not so much on how, basically also on how common they are. So again, we have the rules over here. It has to be common and has to be there is chisarin kis. So we'll continue this discussion tomorrow, Bas Hashem. Welcome to you.